Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Pulitzer Prize winner Richard Russo's latest book is a tribute to the printed word in what many perceive as a cold and relentless digital age. Russo has teamed up with his daughter, artist Kate Russo, to create Interventions, their tribute to the printed book. For it, they chose three stories, Horseman, High and Dry, and The Horace Child, and the title novella, Interventions. Plus, it comes in an elegantly crafted package created by Kate. The collection contains individually bound copies of the four volumes, each paired with a small full-color print of a painting by Kate Russo and gathered in a slipcase. Richard Russo is the author of seven novels, including That Old Cape Magic, Bridge of Sighs, Straight Man, Nobody's Fool, and Empire Falls, which won the 2002 Pulitzer Prize. He has also written a collection of short stories and several produced screenplays. Kate Russo has a Bachelor of Arts from Colby College and a Master of Fine Arts from the Slade School of Fine Art in London. Her art has been exhibited all over London and now in this country, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Richard and Kate Russo to The Book Show. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Great to be here, Joe.
Love to have you here. Always wonderful to see you. So how did this project come about? The last time I spoke to you, you said, I'm working again on short stories, and I was excited. Do you share that excitement? Is this a form you enjoy?
Yeah. I think I kind of got back into the swing of writing short stories as a result of being the editor that year on Best American Short Stories. And you know, I'm primarily a novelist, but for that almost that entire year, I read almost nothing but short stories when we were doing that collection. So it got me back. You know, the same thing happened to Stephen King a couple years before that.
Right.
Stephen had read it too, and he wrote short stories after judging Best American. He wrote short stories for about a year after that.
It's fascinating because you've said this to me in the past, that for you, sometimes the short stories come from ideas that could be novels, but just don't quite make it, or a novel comes from a short story that becomes an extension.
Well, my last novel, actually, That Old Cape Magic, originally started out as a short story that I quickly lost control of. I looked up and it was 75 pages long, and I thought, well, okay, I guess I'm in now. I might as well double down and write a book. And that happens more often than not, because my natural process as a writer is to find out something about a character who then I discover has a mother and a father and a couple of siblings and is having an affair, and you just the universe just suddenly gets larger, and the number of characters just tells me ultimately that you know, I'm in the world of a novel as opposed to a short story. I have trouble in a short story just grabbing the reins and saying, no, we're not going over there.
You know, I read, and I think we may have talked about this, but I read That Old Cape Magic, and actually, Kate, I felt bad for the, did you read that book and were troubled by it in any way?
Extremely.
Because it's about
I threw it across the room when I was done, so.
Really?
Several times, actually, in the
because
process.
It's about a very troubled marriage,
yeah.
And you and your wife Barbara, mm-hmm. Certainly don't seem to have that type of relationship, but man, do you pull it off in that book? And I remember thinking of your kids saying, "Wow, how are they going to react to that?"
I think Emily did a little bit better than I did, just because she understands the world of fiction, I think, a lot better than I do. But I was living in London as well, so I was convinced that there was something going on that I just didn't know about, because I didn't see them that much at that point. So yeah, I called and I said, I think we need to talk about this book.
I assume, and not to put words in your mouth, but I would assume in writing it, that was probably the furthest thing from your mind.
Well, yeah. I mean, things were going well. I mean, part of what was going on there, strangely enough, and I can understand why Kate on the other side of the Atlantic would have been wondered if something was going on in her parents' marriage. But in fact, this was a book I was writing about two weddings, and there's a wedding anchoring each half of that book. And I was writing about these two fictional weddings at the time that Barbara and I were actually preparing for Emily's wedding and Kate's wedding first. It was the first of the two. So I was kind of gleefully writing about a marriage that was coming apart when my own was fine, writing about these disastrous weddings that have, you know, falling ramps where members of the wedding party are severely injured. And I was just gleefully going about writing these disasters, knowing that maybe I was actually in some way protecting us from that happening in real life if I got it all out in fiction.
The new collection is Intervention, and Kate, you're responsible for how this all looks, and it's absolutely beautiful. Was it your idea to collect the new novella with the three stories?
No, I think we came up with that together. And actually, I can't take all the credit. My husband played a huge role in this as well. He's the one who came up with the slipcase idea and the four individually bound volumes. So once we sort of, I guess, arbitrarily decided on four stories, starting with Horsemen, which is one that I hadn't read. I was living in London and I didn't read it when it came out. So we started there. And then actually, as I was working on the artwork for that one, was when my dad started writing Intervention, sort of knowing at that point kind of what theme we wanted to go with. We were interested in this idea of the obsession that the character has in Horsemen. And we thought, okay, we're going to, you know, he said, okay, I'm going to write this story I've been thinking about for a while that I think really plays into this idea of what we obsess about. And that's how Intervention came out.
Tell us a little bit about Intervention. This is about Ray. He's a realtor, a little self-obsessed. And what was it about this character that struck you?
What had fascinated me about Ray about both of the several of the characters in this story, what I'd been thinking about for a while was the way in which we've all had this feeling in life that when we view other people, what their problems are, what's holding them back, and what they need to do in order to correct their lives as they go into a tailspin. With other people, it's really easy to see what's messing them up and to intervene in their lives and say, look, let's fix this. This is not good for you. We need to fix your life. We don't really have that ability to look at our own life. And so that was what was interesting to me about Ray at the beginning of the story. Not to give too much away, Ray has a health problem that he's not dealing with. And other people, including his wife and his brother, who he doesn't see an awful lot, are trying to intervene in his life and get him to do the right thing, the responsible thing, which is to attend to this medical problem that he rather stubbornly is putting off. He is a realtor, as is, by the way, my wife, Jo, you may recall.
Yes, indeed.
So I've been listening to realtor stories for a long time, and I love the way that realtors can serve in life the same function as bartenders and priests. You know, they have a really interesting look at human nature, the things that people tell them about their lives. And Ray has this client. This is a very much a post-recession story, because Ray has this client, a woman who desperately, desperately needs to sell her house because it's going to be foreclosed on if she doesn't. And so she does what she needs to do, or at least part of it. She puts all of this stuff in boxes and goes off to downstate to Portland to find a job, leaving Ray to sell the house. What she doesn't understand about her own life, however, is that she is secretly, unbeknownst to herself, trying to sabotage that sale, because she leaves all the boxes in the house so that whoever goes into that house actually has to walk around. They have a very difficult time navigating the house and a very difficult time imagining themselves in the house, because of course there's all her crap sitting right there. How do you imagine yourself in somebody else's house when all their crap is still sitting there?
I was reminded of the fact that Barbara was in real estate when I read the line that you used, that I figured only someone that was close to a realtor could use. Ray is talking about the house and said that it has a winter view.
Right.
A winter view.
Yes, yes.
When the leaves are off the trees.
Winter views of the water, yes. 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 Yeah. When you live on the coast of Maine, you hear that a lot. That's supposedly a selling point. You have water views. Well, in the winter you do. Yeah, right.
There's also, in Maine, is very much true to your work of very geographical. And there's just this wonderful pictures of Maine. And you write in the book that liberals came fleeing conservatives, libertarians fleeing government, traders fleeing the street, film industry people fleeing L.A., everybody fleeing the culture as if there were no cable TV or internet access north of Boston, and as if it were possible by means of geography to escape Snooki and hip-hop and Sarah Palin and bird flu.
As you can tell, I might have had a little fun writing that sentence.
It seems like you had a lot of fun writing that sentence. But it is an escape place, isn't it?
Yeah, as Ray says in the story, there does seem to be something in the culture right now. I hear it all the time when I'm on the road with book tour, and people, of course, know that I live in Maine, and they'll come up to me and say, "Yeah, gosh, my wife and I talk about this all the time. If things really head south, or if things don't get better, we're just thinking about selling everything we own and moving to Maine." And the way they say that, it's like they're saying we're going to move to Switzerland, or mm-hmm. we're going to move to Cinque Terre, or you know, someplace that involves crossing a large ocean, you know, and Maine isn't, of course, you don't have to cross a large ocean, but Maine has a particular place sort of in the national psyche as a place that is maybe America, but not present day America, a kinder and gentler America where. Things harken back. The pace of life harkens back to, you know, the 60s or something like that. I don't think it's entirely true, but that's the way people think about it.
The name of the new collection is Intervention. It is a beautiful edition that is published by Down East and written by Richard Russo with art by Kate Russo. And you're listening to The Book Show. Kate, one of the things that's fascinating is the inclusion of the art, because I obviously when you open up one of the bound volumes, you see the art at the very beginning. And in some way, it is the story is a very long description that you would see perhaps in a gallery. It's what you would hope to have with every painting that you see of kind of what it represents in one shape or form. How long? I assume that the stories came first, right? You
yes,
read those,
yeah.
and then the
yeah.
art was a response to that.
Yeah.
So how long did it take you to sort of figure out how to artistically represent that?
It took a decent amount of time. We started with Horsemen, and I sat on it for a while, really, because what I like to do is, because I'm not an illustrator, I really want to take an idea that kind of, I think, sort of encapsulates the whole story. And in order to do that, I had to almost forget the story before I could do the painting and really think about what was the thing that I remember from it. Now that it's been a couple of weeks and I haven't looked at it, what is the image that's strongest in my mind? And then I would know what to paint, because that was the image for the whole story for me. Rather than trying to illustrate it and to do a visual narrative, I wanted to do just one moment that you could take with you throughout the whole story, which of course you can actually do because the art can be removed.
And which is beautiful, yes, and the art is beautifully reproduced. When you read the story, does it just take a while for you to kind of recollect? I assume you have to be away from it for a while to
yes.
kind of think of what has
yeah.
happened and how it stays with you.
Yeah, and The Horse Child actually was easy in that way, because I had read that story 4 or 5 years prior when it came
yeah.
out. And so I did, of course, read it again, but the thing that I remembered always from the first time I read it was the bloody shoes, which is the painting that I decided to paint at the end of the day, because that's really what I wanted to do. I thought, okay, what was the clearest image from this story that Sister Ursula had in a lot of ways in the story? And so that was an easy choice.
And your father is far removed from that process,
yes.
other than the writing, I assume.
Yes, yes. No, he had really no idea what I was going to do, and that was kind of part of the agreement, was that he wasn't going to wait. Well, we did a project when we did the broadsides for that Old Cape Magic, where I did
yeah.
some some drawings and some paintings for him at that point to advertise the book. He did. He actually told me what he wanted me to. He said, I want a seagull and I want it casting a shadow of a woman and I want a seagull and I want it next to an urn. And so in that sense, I did do exactly what he wanted me to do. But with this project, I knew that that wasn't. I wanted to. It really needed to be my artistic interpretation of the material.
And it was, and what a joy it was for me to see in Horseman, the first story that I gave Kate to think about, and I gave it to her because I knew she was going to respond to it on two levels. First of all, there was the story, but within the story, there was the poem from A Child's Garden of Verses called Windy Nights,
yes,
that I used to read to Kate and Emily when they were little girls. And so I knew that Kate would not be able to resist the challenge of depicting the horseman in some way, you know, whenever the moon and the stars are set, whenever the wind is high, all night long in the dark and wet, a man goes riding by. Well, what would the man look like? Would it be the man from her childhood memory of the poem, or would it be the horseman from the story? And so when I gave Kate that story to read, it just blew me away what she did, which was I never would have thought about, was that instead of depicting either of those horsemen, what she did was make the viewer the horseman, which you will see when you see this and you take that particular story out and begin to read it. You have this wonderful image that comes directly from the psyche of the main character. That places her and you on the horse heading into the deep dark woods. It's just I think it's just a gorgeous work.
Which is and I find that story about the Child's Garden Verses fascinating because, I mean, so many of us, I was always read those stories as a kid, and Stevenson did such an amazing thing there because you became that kid. For me, it was The Land of Counterpain.
That's so interesting. I was talking about that poem last night.
Yeah, yeah. I mean that you. I was that kid in the bed with all those toys around.
Exactly, exactly. And you can remember too when you were a kid, if you were sick enough, or you did a good enough job of pretending that you were sick enough to stay home from school that day. One of the rewards when you started feeling better was that you could open up a book like A Child's Garden of Verses, and in that wonderful poem, The Land of Counterpain, as you said. You become that child who has this whole armies of little soldiers that you can arrange. Do people even know what a counterpane is anymore? It's your blanket.
Your blanket.
That has a pattern. Yeah. Yeah.
So like a quilt?
And you set your armies up and you begin the process of becoming well again.
The one in the illustrated version that I had was exactly like the quilt that I had on my bed.
Yeah.
So I just immediately went to it. But yeah. When you look at this intersection of the way that this is being produced and the way that this collection has put out, and as I mentioned in the introduction, a tribute to the printed word, is that something that concerns you?
Well, yeah, this is one of the things. One of the things that got us talking was that in both Kate's world, the world of art, and in my world, the world of book publishing. Everything in so many arenas right now is becoming digitized. Kate was saying how her husband Tom, who is in addition to being a sculptor, is a wonderful photographer too. Back when they first met in London, when he took pictures, he could go to just about any photography shop and get his film developed pretty much 24 hours a day in London. By the time they left to come to the United States, there was, what do you say, one?
Well, there was plenty of places that you could get it developed, but the place that he went to, he used what we would call a medium format camera, and you can only get that developed in so many places. And we went to having, you know, this place called Metro that we would go to, and it was, see, would there be four or five of them when I first moved to London, and then by the time we had graduated 2 years later, there was one, and it was only open 9 to 5. And
yeah, doctor's hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was happening in the world of art and photography. It was happening certainly in the world of music, thanks to iTunes. Everything was becoming digitized. It changed the record industry completely. And in my own practice, and I've talked about this with other writers, with That Old Cape Magic was the first time that I ever got my royalty report that had a special section for electronic books. And a lot of the other writers that I know, some of whom write in the genres, they're now up to something like 60 or 70% of the books that they sell are electronic. I'm still well below that, but I'm sure my next book will be creeping higher into those numbers. So we wanted to make a really kind of inconvenient book here. One of the things we determined early on, this was a book that would have a lot of moving parts. There'd be four individually bound volumes. There'd be removable art in each volume. There would be a slipcase to go into it. And there would be, as a result of all of this, absolutely no reason for an electronic version of the book. Mm. So we wanted something, and we got, thanks to Down East, we went with a small publisher because we could do a lot of these things. We could sit in on the meetings and talk about paperweights and things of that nature and do it on sustainable paper and get it printed in the United States, which strangely enough is very difficult to do. Mm. But all of this stuff was pretty important to us.
And you're reminded both through, because it's wonderful to take out that painting and put it to the right-hand side and glance mm-hmm. at it as you're reading the story. I did that with The Horse Child, yeah. which is one of my favorites.
Yeah.
I just love that story and have for a long time. And so it's nice to revisit that story and go back and forth. But yes, that physical act of holding that volume that is a paperback, but you, so you need both hands to hold mm-hmm. it open and to feel it. It's just such a wonderful feeling.
Yeah.
That we don't always have anymore.
That's true, and that's thank you for describing exactly what we were after.
Yeah, yeah. it's a beautiful way of doing it. So when you go out, and does it resonate with people? Do people get it?
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, they really seem to. We get a lot of that kind of reaction of thank you. And a lot of time it's a reaction from people who are reading mostly ebooks, and we're not. I mean, we're certainly, I don't have an e-reader, but my dad does. And, you know, a lot of people are reading mostly ebooks now, but yeah. I think they were really thankful to have a reason finally for a book where they didn't have to buy it as an ebook. It's kind of a souvenir book. It's a different, it's a souvenir of the world of books. You know, it's special, and for that reason, I think people, you know, they're always looking for a reason to have something special. And that's what we were trying to do with this.
And gives you a reason to go into a bookstore.
Yes.
Hopefully an independent bookstore and look around and find something like this.
Well, that's mm-hmm. one of the things that we're doing in the tour now promoting this book is, we've been to Chicago and to New York, but we're promoting it mostly in New England. And we're going from great independent bookstore to independent bookstore. And that's part two of why I suspect people are responding, particularly in these venues, because people who are coming out in support of this particular book are the same people who understand the value of independent bookstores and understand that when you go into one of these, as opposed to going on a search engine in an online bookseller, You go into an independent bookstore with the idea that you might be surprised, that you might find something special. There might be a writer that you know nothing about and should know something about. And so you open yourself to the possibility of discovering new things as opposed to searching for something that you already know exists. Mm. So that's been very important too in the way we've been going about and promoting this book.
That's a great point, because the one thing that is really lost in all of this is that art of browsing, isn't it?
Yes.
Of sort of bouncing from literature to the travel section to suddenly finding yourself in the poetry aisle, which maybe you would not have found
exactly.
if that title did not catch your eye.
Exactly. The language is just so revealing at this point. When you search for something, as you would do on a search engine, that implies it's like searching for your reading glasses. Well, you know they exist already, don't you? It's just a question of finding them. and a machine will help you do that. If you've misplaced your cell phone, you know it exists. Get somebody else to call it, you know, yeah. and it will ring and you'll find it. You can do all of this with machines. When you browse, you open yourself to the possibility of finding something new, and you don't find, you don't look for it with an engine. You look for it with somebody like my daughter, Emily, who is an independent bookseller, and who will help you find something that you know exists, but will also help you find something that you don't know exists, and will send you into the aisle that you might not have gone to of your own volition. And if you wind up over there, you may discover the reason why.
Richard and Kate Russo's new slipcase collection is Intervention. It is published by Down East. Thank you both so much for being with us. It's such a great pleasure to have you here, and I wish all the luck in the world in this project.
Thank you so much.
Great pleasure. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about the show. You can email us at book@wamc.org, and you can listen again to this or find past book shows at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening. For The Book Show, I'm Joe Donahue.